I was looking at Twitter the other day during the Olympics, and remember there was the day when Italy won the men's 100 meter sprint and everybody was going absolutely crazy about it?
I'll be honest, Martin, no, because I really don't follow the Olympics, but you can continue with your story anyway.
Okay, well, this makes it slightly less interesting, but Italy, an Italian man, won the men's 100 meter sprint, and Eurovision did a tweet from the official Eurovision account that said,
yes.
Do Italy just win everything? Is that what they do now?
Yes.
And I'm thinking maybe it is, because there's Eurovision,
Euros.
There's the Euros, and now there's the Olympics.
Right, but they've not won the Olympics, have they? They've just won one race in it.
Now who's the doing down Italy? Give them a little bit of success. Go on, be kind.
Well, sorry, were you doing Italy down before? I don't understand why you've said that. But yes, I will say this. No, Italy, you haven't won the Olympics.
Ooh.
Get over yourselves.
Didn't think we'd get sass to start this episode of Nullpois.
Nullpois is shameful.
Nullpois is lack of respect for Euros.
It's the ultimate humiliation.
Shame that they must be feeling.
Nullpois is no fun.
Yes, indeed. Well, I'm sorry, but, you know, equally, good on you. I couldn't do it, so I guess I'll give you some praise there. Well done, Italy. But this is not an Olympics podcast, as you can tell, because I don't have a clue. This is a Eurovision podcast. I am Laura, that's Martin there. We are very much into the Eurovision rather than the Olympics. But I would say this podcast, Martin, has become an Olympic standard, would you not, in Eurovision podcasts?
Sure. Mm. I mean, I'll take that if you're willing to say that and put your neck on the line to say that, then yes.
We might be able to show that that's not the case in just a moment. But anyway, Martin, tell us what's coming up in this Olympic standard of podcasts.
Well, I will, because you know that you and I, are trying to create the UK entry for Eurovision next year. We are trying to represent the UK because we reckon everyone else is throwing their name in the ring. We might as well give it a go.
Yeah.
So on the podcast today, you're going to be finding out what we need, the ingredients we need to write a Eurovision winning song. This is the sort of information that we need, okay? And speaking to somebody who has studied, and I mean properly studied, Eurovision songs, if there's one person who can tell us how we write a Eurovision winning song, it is Chris Lockery, and you will hear from him a little bit later on. Also, some news from the world of Eurovision and other things too, Chris.
Well, this is what I want. I was teeing up a little bit. You know, we were talking about Olympic standard. We were saying, what a great podcast this is. And unfortunately, Martin, you've let us down again, haven't you?
Yeah, it's time for this.
They made a mistake, they messed it all up. Silly old Martin and Laura, but they're putting it right. They're making amends here on Correction Corner.
Yes, hello and welcome to Correction Corner.
What have you done? Every time, everybody, every time, Martin does it again. I was thinking, there's no way we're only going to use that Correction Corner jingle once. What have you done this time, Martin? What did you get wrong?
Well, during a chat with Ian Dale on the podcast last week, I suggested to him that Lena won for Germany in the year 2008. And I have to tell you now, I'm really sorry about this, but I was wrong. It was not 2008. It was 2010. 2010 was the year. I sincerely apologise for getting that incorrect. And I'm sorry. I can't say anything more than that. I'm really sorry. Sorry.
In all fairness, you did say, I think, at the time. So that does let you off a little bit. You were not strong in your convictions. So there is that. You didn't say, it's definitely you this. You just said, well, I think it's that. But then later you never corrected yourself. So we're correcting ourselves now. There you go.
There we go. Thank you very much for listening to this particular edition of Correction Corner. I imagine there will be more.
It'll be back again.
Yeah, it will almost certainly be back again. Hey, good news. I hear from you the other day. Saw a little photo of you being very pleased with yourself.
Yes.
You've been having a jab.
That's right. I got my second jab. I believe you've been also double jab, talking, of course, about the coronavirus vaccine. I don't know. I don't think we need to explain that's what we're talking about. But just in case you've been living on the North Pole for the past year, that's what we've done. You also got your second jab quite a long time ago, didn't you, Martin?
I think what happened is
the NHS got confused and thought Martin might be a 50-year-old man. And I don't blame them why they might get confused with that. I don't blame them. Because a lot of other people think that sometimes when they listen to Martin on this show.
Yes,
so
thank
it makes
you.
Sense.
Yeah, so you and I are now double jabbed, but we're not the only ones.
No, indeed. Mr. Lordy, a.k.a. the lead singer of Lordy, who won in 2006 with Hard Rock Hallelujah for Finland. He has also got his second vaccination dose. He went to a pop-up vaccination event to help promote the availability of vaccination jabs. And what more can you do to promote the availability of jabs than have Lordy rock up?
Then use up one of the jabs. Absolutely.
And to sort of promote the event, I guess they must have asked Lordy, you know, like, what happened? You know, like, tell us a bit more about why this is important. You know, this is going to give us a freedom back. Tell us more about that. Mr. Lordy said, "They put a big needle in my arm, and that's exactly why I came here. This was my second vaccine dose." So there you go.
Wow. Big news today, isn't there?
Thanks a lot, Lordy. Going on. thank you. You've done your bit, I guess, in promoting it. He's also added, though, talking about the pandemic, he did say it's given us an opportunity to be creative. We've recorded 7 albums during the pandemic.
Seven?
7 albums?
That's loads.
He doesn't say what length, but yeah, they've recorded 7 albums. You know, when they're going to be coming out, I don't know. Are they all going to be coming out? I don't really know. But Lordy's been busy, basically.
Unbelievably busy. Ooh. Wow. Okay, great. Watch this space. More from Lordy to come. Great stuff. So that's one little bit of news there concerning a Finnish act. And now we move over to some news concerning a Romanian Eurovision entry.
Yes, so this is just a little bit of tidbit, really, but that came out from, I think it was from a TikTok video, from Romania's Roxen. It was come out as non-binary. They said, "I always thought I was a boy in a girl's body." You'll remember they sang Amnesia in Eurovision 2021. They didn't do that well, I'll be honest, for Romania. A lot of people liked them and they were quite well liked across the competition. They had a lovely singing voice, but it just didn't quite come together for them. But anyway, yes, they were doing a question answer session with fans on TikTok, and the 21-year-old has come out and said that they're non-binary. Real name, of course, is Larissa Roxana, I think, Gurgiu. I'm probably not going to say. My Romanian's a little bit off, I'll be honest. But it's something along those lines. And that's what they said. They did say, though, they were happy for people to refer to them with she, her, or he, him pronouns as well. So they weren't bothered which they prefer, but they did say they were non-binary. So there we go. Just a little bit of extra news, really, from the world of Eurovision.
Yeah, and this follows a long line of people in the world of celebrity in general talking openly about LGBTQ plus issues, about issues surrounding gender identity and things like that. And I wonder, this is the world that we live in now, and it is, what a wonderful place to be, actually, when you really think about it, how far we've come, where people like Roxanne can talk openly about things that are really personal, and in some parts of the world and in some parts of Europe still quite controversial. But it's great we've got to a place where this can be talked about openly and freely and without prejudice.
Definitely. And you know, Eurovision has always been a place for that, really, which is great. So yes, I agree, it's definitely great that their contestants can feel that they're openly allowed to sort of mention this and talk about this, and fans are very willing to accept it, even though, as you say, some of the entrance possibly in the EBU, at least some of the members of the EBU are perhaps less than tolerant towards some of these things. But hopefully that's going to change. Hopefully that's going to keep moving forward, and we can keep seeing those changes rolling on.
Absolutely right. Still to come here on Nul Poir, talking correspondence in just a little bit, because we, I don't know whether you know this, Chris.
Yes, it's going on. I see what's happening.
We got a YouTube channel, haven't we?
I wrote it down from when you told me last time,
and that's how I know. So some correspondence from a video that we put up not too long ago on that. That is on the way.
Right, well, as you might know, we are throwing our hat in the ring in creating a Eurovision song this year, but we wanted to speak to someone who's a bit of an expert on what kind of songs do well at the song contest. His name is Chris Lockery, I hope I got that right, otherwise known as Kit Lovelace on Twitter. He basically analyses the songs by lots of different qualities, such as their keys and tempos, to see what makes the perfect Eurovision song, so we thought we had to get him on to have a chat with him about this. So hello, first of all, Chris.
Hi, how are you doing?
Very good. Thank you so much for coming on. Really interested to know about this research that you do. In your summary, because you go into quite a lot of detail, I would say, on Twitter about what does make the perfect Eurovision song. But if you can summarise a little bit about what the key elements are in the past sort of maybe 10 years or so, what has done well?
Okay, so I think the significant change came around the turn of the century, around 1999-2000. And this is when we started to see what a lot of the UK still considers to be the Eurovision sound.
That kind of pop, Euro-pop type thing.
Yeah, kind of a schlagery. But the sound of the competition has changed quite dramatically. And obviously, between each year, there can be a huge amount of variety in the actual sound of each entry. So from year to year, songs that sound similar don't tend to win twice in a row. The styles can change, but there is something kind of consistent about what's changed in the sound. And it's that this bright pop sound of the days of ABBA has been replaced by a much more dramatic, moody, and kind of Eastern influenced minor sound.
And does that mean then that the songs of old, the more, I suppose, nostalgic Eurovision songs like ABBA, does that mean that that sound can't win again? Does it need to be doing something more modern to cut through? Or is there room for maybe a little blast from the past?
I can't think of anyone who's done that blast from the past sort of sound and it's been overwhelmingly successful. If you look back to 2000, you'll notice that the majority of the songs were in major keys. Then if you look at the most recent years, 2017, 2018, 2019, in fact, anything really from about 2003, 2004 onwards, overwhelmingly the majority are in a minor key. All the ones that are in major will generally be found around the bottom of the final scoreboard.
Right, so we want to be writing in a minor key then if we want to stand any chance of winning here.
Yeah. Pop music generally has been getting sadder. People have been studying pop music from the 50s onwards, and it's been on a downward trend. Living in times of economic hardship, global recession, there's political unrest, certainly in Europe. That all sort of feeds into it.
So we've got that. So you're saying definitely a minor key, but also what about the tempo?
The one that I'm particularly fascinated by is it's 128 beats per minute. I find this one particularly fascinating because it's come dead last in the competition quite a lot. The only theory that I've got for why is not because there's something intrinsically about 128 beats per minute that we don't like, but because of the way the maths works, Eurovision has an upper limit of 3 minutes. Your song has to be done in 3 minutes. If you pace your song at 128 beats per minute, you get 96 bars lasts exactly 3 minutes. 96, it's a really, really, really helpful number. So in terms of that, these are the building blocks of musical phrasing. So at 128 beats per minute, you've basically got a foolproof jigsaw for plug and play, really. I think there's something about the songs that adhere to that that seem very formulaic.
I see.
So do something a little different. Go either faster or slower, or just sort of mix it up so it doesn't seem too obvious. This is all very helpful information, Chris, I have to say.
Mm. Yeah,
I'd like to know about where the UK went wrong last time, because the UK, I thought, oh, it's an all right song, seems to be fairly upbeat, up-tempo. I thought that was really nice. And it obviously performed disastrously. Was that the song's fault? And if so, where did it go wrong?
There are a lot of factors that go into making a successful Eurovision thing. And I don't think it's purely on the music, but if you look back at the UK's entries over the last few years, you do see these patterns cropping up time and time again. We do consistently bring things in a major key, and we have used 128 beats per minute. This Embers was in 126 beats per minute, which is getting very close, F sharp major. which hasn't done very well. D minor is a really good one.
Okay, we'll remember that.
It just keeps cropping up, and it does well from time to time. So if you looking for scribbling,
D minor, Martin,
yeah, remember?
Would be my suggestion. Okay, D minor. One thing in our favor this year was we didn't have a key change this time. Key changes, everybody seems to think like, oh wow, yeah, key change. Oh look, there it is, key change. Everybody's standing up from their stools and doing a key change. Everybody take a drink. It's a key change. You know, it really seems to be a big part of the UK Eurovision experience. When in truth, very few songs have key changes. And now that we've got the semi-finals, we can see this happen quite a lot. That a lot of the ones that have key changes don't really make it past the semis. If a key change is done artfully and it absolutely serves the song, then I don't see that there's a problem. But most of the time, it's just used because people don't want to hear the same chorus again and again and again. You need something to ring the changes. And if you're struggling in 3 minutes to sort of find new tricks, it might be that you've built your song incorrectly. So that's something to bear in mind.
All right. So we've got D minor. We've got, as in do it in D minor, we've got don't have a key change, keep it in minor, don't do 128 beats per minute. Have you got any other final advice?
This is one to keep an eye on. I think you have a home advantage in that English, ever since the language rules changed and people were able to sing in any language that they like, the majority of winners have been in English. One of the things that's interesting about Sweden's dominance, not just of the Eurovision, but of pop music more generally, is that they tend to write in English as well. And one of the interesting things that producers like Max Martin, who very famously produced a lot of Britney Spears, Katy Perry, Kelly Clarkson, done some Taylor Swift, and some work for Adele, the Backstreet Boys, Five. One of his big things is that because he doesn't write in his native language, in Swedish, his lyrics basically serve the melody. So he's not so bothered about making the lyrics make sense. People writing in English as a second language don't tend to come at it from the same position. The melody guides what they're doing. And I think that's a really important thing that native English-speaking songwriters forget, is that the lyrics can come second to your melody. If your melody is not strong, you aren't going to make up for that with pithy lyrics. Even though you're writing in the language that has traditionally won Eurovision a lot, don't think too hard about it. Just make sure it's fun. Have fun. Don't make sense. There you go. That's how you boil it down.
This is just fantastic advice. There's some great ideas here. Just to finish, Chris, if you can kind of sum all of what you've just said up by just talking about one song in particular, is there a song in Eurovision history that you think does all of those things that you've described perfectly and I suppose could be held up as an example of the best Eurovision song?
Ooh, is there? I think one of the song that really sticks out for me, and this might just be because it was more recent than others, but Daddy's song, Think About Things. Oh. I know it didn't get its moment actually in 2020, but it would have been really, really, really interesting to see how that played because it was so viral and people loved it all around the world. It became such a big hit even without the competition. The one thing it did have was a key change. So that might have shot a hole in my key change theory.
But it's Darby. He can get away with it.
It's got the kind of kooky-ish lyrics that don't quite make sense, but has a nice, you know, when you unpack it, it's nice and fun and it's got a bit of heart to it. Minor key, fun, it's pacey. I think if it had its moment on the stage, it would have been hugely successful as a sort of platonic ideal of the Eurovision model that I cling to. I think it's a really neat version. So something to emulate.
Yeah.
Nothing too tricky.
Right.
Just a global smash hit.
Yeah.
So if you can write one of those, I think you'll be absolutely fine. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, That's my great advice.
We'll get on with it. We'll get on it now.
Yeah. Oh, brilliant. Thank you so much for that, Chris. Right. So just write a global smash hit. That's it. Brilliant.
Global smash hit, but minor key.
Minor key. Global smash hit in minor key. Brilliant. Well, that's been so helpful, Chris. And generally really interesting as well to learn all about that and what's doing well. Thank you so much. No doubt you'll be doing the same again for next year's batch, I'm guessing.
Oh, yeah, no, my soul belongs to this this analysis.
And again, if people want to sort of follow this analysis that you do, how can people find out about it?
I write an annual guide for something called Pop Bitch, but I also tweet and I live tweet through the competition at Kit Lovelace.
Brilliant. Well, again, thank you so much. And yeah, look forward to next year's batch where we'll be in it, obviously. Right, so if you got all of these down, Martin, by the way,
thank you very much to Chris there.
So we've got, it should be in D minor, he suggested. He said no key changes unless you're Darby, if you can help it. Not in 128 BPM, in a minor key in general anyway, even if it's not in D minor. And nonsense lyrics, he basically said. It's fine just to talk nonsense.
Well, that's lucky.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's a good one. That's handy, because I think we'd be doing that anyway. Anyway, but I think this could really help us.
Oh, definitely. So helpful. We've got some thinking to do now, really, haven't we? We know some of the things that we need to do. So we know we need to put it in D minor. That's fine. We know we don't put a key change in. That's fine. But we've got some decisions, because although we know it's not going to be 128 beats per minute, we need to decide where we're going to do a song that's faster than that or slower than that.
Mm.
And we need to decide some of the more other elements. How's it going to sound? Is it going
to
be rocky?
Is it going to
be poppy?
Really. Yeah, rocky, poppy. We need to think of what's it going to be sort of based around, really. Is there going to be a theme that we're going to sing about? We've got to start thinking about this, really, because I think maybe in about a week or 2 weeks' time, we might have to start making it, because we've got to kind of submit it fairly soon.
Yeah.
If we want to do this.
Some of the downsides here that are coming to mind
already are that
all I've got is this keyboard. And I haven't got a guitar.
I mean, do you remember?
I haven't got anything like that. So we are quite limited in terms of instrumentation. It can do lots of different sounds. It's got like drums and things. But I'm just warning you now that we're working with what we've got here.
That's all right. I can clap my hands.
Okay. Great. Great contribution. Right. Cressy, would you like to tell me some stuff about a thing I don't know about? You know, like you always ask me, you know, you've got a YouTube channel. And of course I know we've got a YouTube channel, because I was there at the time. I was there when we recorded it. We only did it literally like the other week, and it's only just gone up on the internet. Mm-hmm. So don't hit me with all of that now. And like, do you know we've got a YouTube channel? I know we've got a YouTube channel.
The thing you just did, like literally 10 minutes ago. You mean don't do that?
Yeah, that's it.
Right. Okay, well, we do have a YouTube channel, didn't know if you know that, Martin. Oh. And it's called Null Poir. Surprise, surprise. And it's where we basically talk about, we look at Eurovision songs in the past that have scored the dreaded Null Poir, and we react to those videos. We decide, did they deserve them? Now, recently we did one with Norway. It was from their 1997 entry, San Francisco, with Tor Endresen. We kind of decided that it wasn't terrible, so it didn't deserve Null Poir completely, but also it wasn't that great. And we've had some great correspondence from that, so thank you very much to everyone who's been getting in touch about that. Please do keep your comments coming. Literally just go on YouTube, put in Null Poir, and you'll see us there. Look at the video. It's only about 10 minutes long, and we want to hear your thoughts on it. Give us a comment, give us a like and subscribe, because we're going to keep these going now. I know we've had a bit of a break with these videos, but we are going to do more of these. But thank you to Nikki, who says, I agree that the songs were held to a much higher standard. So that's what you were saying, Martin, about earlier on in the sort of 90s, 80s, 70s during Eurovision, the songs were held to a higher standard than perhaps later on in the competition.
Yeah,
so
isn't it interesting, actually, given what we were talking to Chris about, where he said that there was that 2000 cutoff point,
yes,
where things started to change a little bit, and the way that songs were written changed. And I wonder that that kind of plays into some of the stuff we were talking about on the YouTube video.
Possibly, although I don't want to give you that. Anyway, Nikki says, I agree that the songs were held to a much higher standard. This song's a gentle bop, but yeah, extremely forgettable, although they do, and I presume she's talking about the traffic light singers that we talk about in the YouTube video, they do look like the Wiggles dads. So thank you very much for that, Nikki.
Thank you, Nikki.
Words also got in touch with us saying, I kept thinking Tor was going to do something abominable towards the end of the song to justify the Null Poir, but he didn't. No way, it deserves zero. So I think a lot of people agree with us there. But if you don't, if you think yes, it definitely did, or if you agree with us either, do get in touch, go on the video and let us know your thoughts.
Yeah, and it might not be that you want to talk about YouTube stuff and Null Poir getting songs. You might want to talk about anything that's been discussed on the podcast, or give your thoughts on an element of Eurovision that you reckon need discussing. So many ways to get in touch. You've got to do at least one of them.
You do indeed. Thank you to the people who've been giving us a 5-star rating at the moment. Did you know you could also do that? Literally, if you go on iTunes, just click those 5 stars. That means you've given us a 5-star rating. You can do it on all the other apps we're on as well. Of course, Spotify we're on. We're on lots of different things. Go on there. But yes, if you want to get in contact with us, we're on Instagram. On Instagram, we put lots of behind the scenes photos of the podcast and what we we've been doing. If you want to check that out, if you want to see what we look like, we are Nolpois Podcast on Instagram. We're on Twitter. We give you lots of reminders and updates about things that have been going on. We are @Poinol on Twitter. You can also email us if you want to have a chat with us. If you want us to let us know your thoughts in a longer format.
Yeah, we like emails, don't we?
We do. We actually really like emails. So it'd be great to get a few more of those in. Thank you to everyone who has been sending us stuff. Nolpoirpodcast@gmail.com. It is that simple.
Very, very easy. Well, thank you very much for listening to this particular edition of Nolpoir. Going to be back next week with more stuff and maybe getting a little bit closer to working out what exactly we're going to be doing. I think we need to make some decisions. We've got some decisions.
I think we do. Maybe next week has to be decision time. I don't know.
Decision time for what we do when we create this UK entry. It's a lot harder than I thought it was going to be when we threw our name in the hat. We haven't even started writing it yet.
Don't back out now.
No, I'm not backing out. I'm in. Good. I'm in all the way to the end, but let's see how we get on. Back next week with more fun and games. Thank you for listening to this edition of Nolpoir.